Omaha Public Radio presents another program from Film Streams, Omaha's nonprofit cinema on Noon Forum. In a very heartwarming program for Thanksgiving week, we'll hear a panel discussion which followed a screening of the 2015 documentary film Taking Lena Home, directed by Alexandra Grant. This program, presented in collaboration with the Omaha Public Library and the Greater Omaha Genealogical Society, was recorded by Omaha Public Radio on Tuesday evening, August 16, 2016, for broadcast at this time. The opinions expressed are those of the panelists and do not necessarily represent those of Film Streams, KIOS-FM, or the Omaha Public School District. In 2000, on a road trip across the United States, Los Angeles-based artist Alexandra Grant purchased a tombstone from 1880 in an antique consignment store in eastern Wyoming. She was told that the stone, of a little girl named Lena Davis, aged 8 months, was from a local ranch that was being developed and the stone was desacralized. Only in retrospect did Alexandra realize that she didn't quite buy into the story, and just seeing the stone so out of place in the store made her want to take care of it. For many years, the tombstone lived in Alexandra's home, but then took up a more permanent residence in her art studio. In 2011, she moved to a new studio and knew it was time to find a permanent place for the tombstone. Alexandra thought it should end up in a collection or museum dedicated to the American West. Not sure how to find such a collection, she decided that someone would contact her if she posted it for sale on eBay. In the fall of 2011, Alexandra discovered that the tombstone she had collected as a piece of folk art in Wyoming had in fact been stolen from Polk County, Nebraska, a rural farming community just over 80 miles west of Omaha. At the same time, Julie Middendorf, an amateur genealogist based in Nebraska, read an article about another 130-year-old tombstone located in a yard sale in Florida. She wondered if there might be other tombstones out there for sale. And so Julie looked online and encountered Alexandra's listing within 24 hours of it being posted on eBay. Julie first looked for genealogical records in eastern Wyoming, but nothing matched up. On a hunch, she began researching online databases in Nebraska. Through census records and on Ancestry.com, Julie found a match. Her husband urged her to contact the local sheriff's office. Sure enough, the theft of Lena Davis's tombstone in 1945 from the Pleasant Valley Cemetery in Polk, Nebraska, was the county's oldest unsolved crime. Alexandra was contacted by both Julie and Deputy Sheriff Bob Carey, who used eBay sobriquets. She was surprised when she called Deputy Carey and he answered the phone, Sheriff's Office. But she was even more surprised to learn that the tombstone was from somewhere and was so pleased that she could return it. More surprising still is that Lena Davis, deceased in 1880, has a living first cousin, Chuck Doremus. Alexandra decided to drive the tombstone back to Polk County herself, stopping en route in Colorado Springs, Colorado, to meet Chuck Doremus and his wife Marion. When Alexandra explained that she was an artist and that by shining a light on this gesture of returning the tombstone to Polk, she could draw attention to it, and she asked Chuck what his expectations were. He said that he spends a few weeks in Polk every summer and takes care of the cemetery, trimming branches, placing flags. He described it as an outdoor museum of local history. Chuck's description gave her a special purpose. Taking Lena Home documents the discovery of the tombstone's provenance and its return to Nebraska in November 2011, as well as the celebration and benediction of the tombstone organized by the Polk County Historical Society in July 2012. The film's director, Alexandra Grant, used the documentary process as a way to reflect on the importance of small gestures, like the return of a stolen object, as works of art in themselves. The film is an opportunity to explore ancestry and family history, reflect on early immigrant experiences to the American West, and the role historical artifacts have in connecting us to greater narratives. This is an extraordinary series of coincidences happening to her and to a small community. The members of the panel will be Cindy Drake, Nebraska History Library Curator and Statewide Cemetery Registry Coordinator with the Nebraska State Historical Society, the director of the film, Alexandra Grant, and Julie Middendorf, a genealogy enthusiast who solved the mystery of Lena's provenance. Here now to introduce the program is our moderator, Casey Logan, Deputy Director of Film Streams.
We're really excited to have you here. This is Amy with the Omaha Public Library and Tamara with the Greater Omaha Genealogical Society. We're really excited here at Film Streams to be partnering with both of their organizations on this screening, and super excited that the artist behind this project, Alexander Grant, is here and will be part of our panel that's going to be discussing the film and the project afterwards. So, usually at this point I always ask how many people are here for the first time. Tonight I'm kind of curious how many people are here from outside of Douglas County. Wow. Very cool. That's great. Well, welcome. I want to tell you a little bit about Film Streams before I turn it over to Amy and Tamara. Film Streams is a nonprofit arts organization. Our mission is to enhance the cultural environment of Omaha through the presentation and discussion of film as an art form. We opened our home here at the Ruth Sokoloff Theater just a little bit more than 9 years ago. So we're coming up on 10 years next summer. Earlier this year, we announced really exciting plans and a tremendous opportunity to renovate and reopen the 91-year-old Dundee Theater, which is a project we're really excited about, and we'll be open to that by 2018. We have four principal programs here. We show first run films, new American independent films, foreign films, documentaries, the types of movies that maybe in the past would have missed our region completely. We want to be bringing those movies to Omaha so that audiences in this region have the opportunity to see them. We have a repertory program where we show classics from throughout the history of film. You saw previews for a couple of our series, including our Hollywood Does Politics series, which we're doing right now. And the idea behind that is to celebrate the history of art form and bring classic movies back to the big screen as they're meant to be seen. We have an education program where we have a daytime education program where we have high school students come to the theater during the day with their classes, watch a great movie, and have a guided discussion afterwards. We have a free student night the first Monday of every month. And then we have a community development program where we partner with other nonprofits and community groups from throughout the area on one-night screenings and discussions, and that's kind of what brings us here tonight. So this is through our community development program. Thanks again to the Omaha Public Library and Greater Omaha Genealogical Society for partnering with us. Thank you to Alexander Grant for being here and to our panelists for being here as well. I'll turn it over to Amy.
Thank you, Casey. So my name is Amy Mather. I'm the Adult Services Manager for Omaha Public Library, and I'm really excited about this collaboration. First of all, I'd like to thank Alexandra for bringing this, and she had emailed me like 5 or 6 years ago about this project, and just putting a little, bug in my head, and then now here we are with this project, so really excited about that, and we're really excited about our amazing partner, the Greater Omaha Genealogical Society, and of course, Film Streams. So as you all know, most of you all may do genealogy research, but at some point, if you haven't, you are going to wake up one day and say, I need to research my past. And so this is what this film is about. Taking Lena home was a journey about figuring out who she was. So probably in some part of your life, you're going to do that. So Omaha Public Library is a great resource for that. We have microfilm, newspapers, books. We have an amazing genealogy room at our W. Dale Clark branch. And so right now, Omaha Public Library is working on, so stay tuned for this, the Omaha Star Historic Digital Archive. So we're always working to bring resources to you to research your family. And I'm going to hand it over to Tamara.
Thank you, Amy. As she said, my name is Tamara Byrne. I am the current president of the Greater Omaha Genealogical Society. We are a nonprofit. We were established in 1974. And we have almost 400 members. And those members are all over the country. Anybody can belong to the society. It's fun. We help each other do family research. That is what our goal is, to help each other find out about our ancestors and our history. I can't tell you how excited we are to be partnering with Film Streams and Omaha Public Library to bring this special screening. It fits with what we do as a society. So welcome, and I'm going to turn it over to Casey.
I'm going to introduce our special guests tonight. To my right is Alexandra Grant. Alexandra is an artist who uses language, literature, and exchanges with writers as the basis for her work in painting, drawing, and sculpture. Alexandra's work has been exhibited at the Museum of Contemporary Art, Los Angeles, the Los Angeles County Museum of Art, LACMA, among other museums and galleries. She has collaborated with artists and writers, including philosopher and playwright Helene, help me,
Sixu.
Hypertext pioneer Michael Joyce, and actor and writer Keanu Reeves. Some of the basic queries that fuel her work are, how do we read and write images? How does language place us? What is the role of the hand in a world dominated by electronic communication? I think maybe we'll come back to that question. And of course, she is also the artist behind this film and this project. So welcome back to Nebraska. Welcome back to Omaha. To her right is Julie Middendorf. Julie and her husband Mark are parents to four children. She is a home educator, director of her town's library in Scotia, Nebraska, and a living history interpreter at the Stuart Museum in Grand Island. As an amateur genealogist, she is inspired by the stories of faith and resilience she uncovers and by the many amazing people she meets through those experiences. So welcome, Julie. And then to Julie's right is Cindy Steinhoff-Drake. Cindy is a librarian of the Nebraska History Library at the Nebraska State Historical Society, where she has been employed for 39 years. She's a native Nebraskan and a graduate of Nebraska Wesleyan University. In the 1980s, she published two local community histories, a church history, her family church updated and revised in 2005, and a book on Nebraska Centennial Farms with Georgine Sones, as well as compiling the letters of her husband's grandmother. Her interest in genealogy began with her job at the Historical Society by helping patrons research their family history. Through the years, she has prepared several programs on genealogical research. Besides her librarian duties, she was assigned to be the coordinator for the Nebraska Statewide Cemetery Registry in 2005. Along with her husband and son, she lives in southern Cass County, Nebraska, on a farmstead that has been in her family for over 100 years. So, welcome, all of you. So I'm going to ask, I'm going to kind of open things up, and I'm going to ask each of you a little bit of a different question. And then I know we're going to have questions and comments from the audience, so as quickly as possible, we'll open it up to all of you. Alexandra. So I'll explain like very quickly why I'm up here. So it was about a year ago. I wrote a story for the World Herald, and I met Alexandra along the way of this process. And so I do want to kind of return to where you were a year ago and how you got to here and kind of that sort of short moment in all of this. At the time, I asked you a ton of questions. And we sat in your studio at the Bemis Center. You were a Bemis resident at the time. But one question I don't think I asked you at that point is, you know, you've lived and have been living with this story and have been carrying it for now like 16 years, right? Is that about right? Yeah. So you're a visual artist. You're a very accomplished visual artist. You could have documented this whole experience with paintings, and you did. I mean, you did. You certainly produced some visual art with this. You could have written an essay. You could have written a book. You could have written your first opera about all of this.
I hope that doesn't happen.
Why film? And at what point did you realize, and I know you were filming along the way, but at what point and what about film and creating this sort of, you know, this sort of documentary diary? Why film?
I think when I put the ad on eBay to the day I got into the car, there was about... That's not me.
Can you get a little
closer to the mic?
Yes.
First, I have
Thank
to do
you.
The tall person adjustment. It was about 6 days. So when I learned the truth about the stone, and it switched immediately from being a piece of folk art, maybe to give a little context, I grew up in Mexico. In Mexico, there's a tradition of... I'm still not loud enough. I can see. It's not on. Is it on?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's on. Just be louder. Okay. I'll be louder then. I was really interested in like the culture of death, I think, and I saw the tombstone as part of a really interesting folk collection that, you know, had come through my family, I suppose. And the minute it went from being a piece of folk art in that one phone call with Bob Carey
to being someone's real grave marker, I knew I had to return immediately. I mean, it was like hot potato. And it was November. It was right before Thanksgiving, and I called my oldest friends who are here in the audience, who had just moved to Omaha from L.A., and jokingly had said, you should come up with an art project in Nebraska. And I went, not realizing that I would be spending so much time here every year and so happily. But I just, there had to be this immediacy and that I needed to jump in the car with the stone. And what better way to capture that experience than with a camera? So like any amateur, I called an expert and I said, what should I do? And got a list of things from Best Buy. And went to Best Buy and picked up. And what I love, you know, it's funny watching the film now. Amelia Peterson, who's the editor, is here in the audience tonight. And she and I finished it in November. And it's so great to see it, especially with this particular audience. But the first shot, I can't even square off my nose, you know, and we really wanted to show that there wasn't, this wasn't. We wanted to use the amateurness of the film to show the journey that I was on, you know, that the stone was on its own journey, but I was on a journey into something and the total unknown. I mean, there was this one night I was like calling someone back in LA and they're like, where are you sleeping tonight? And I'm like, I'm going to stay over at Julie's house. And they go, the lady you met on eBay. And I was like, yeah, what's so weird about that? You know, like I met her on eBay. She seems really nice. And I was like, I sound like a totally crazy person. And I think there's that witnessing that film does. I mean, I really had tried to convince Amelia that I didn't want to be in the film. Can you imagine? That would have been a really short film. But that sense of like how to honor all the people that I met along the journey was to make myself a character. And even I still squirm right now because it's really hard to watch yourself on screen. But that's part of what it was. It was about what film does, especially documentary film, is that it makes everyone equal. And so there's so many, I mean, I could go in so many directions, but I think it's the immediacy and also it was the jumping before thinking about it. And I think you get that sense. Like I was like, let's go. Oh, I don't have any gas in the tank. Yeah.
Julie, you play a pretty critical role in all of this. When Alexandra was ready to kind of put out this sort of signal to the world that she had this headstone, you were the person that just sort of by chance, by fate, whatever word you want to use, was there ready to receive it. In talking to you, a week or so ago, you know, you were saying that you kind of feel like your part of the story is in the film. But I think one of the themes here is that this sort of story doesn't really have an end. It just kind of keeps going. So what is the Julie Mindorf postscript to taking Lena home?
Well, for our family, it was a really exciting time, obviously. And my son, my oldest son, was preparing to start his senior year in high school. And because of the inspiration of the story and because of what Alexandra had done, he got really excited about trying to do something history-related. And so he went to our local cemetery, very small cemetery in our very small town, and realized there were 42 Civil War vets there. And so he did a research project that took an entire year to do. And he researched each one of those people. And one of them was a man named John Bridwell, who had been born in the 1830s as a slave and was in the colored infantry. And he was the only black man that lived in our town for 60 years. Thank you. So he was the only black man that lived in our town for 60 years. And his family had moved after his burial. And so we put that out on the internet, the magic world of the internet. And then we sat back and waited. And 2 years later, we heard from his great-great-granddaughter. And she's an 80-year-old retired nursing instructor who lives in Kansas, Wichita, Kansas. And she had lost all history of her family, and this was a way for her to find it again. And so we were in touch with her, and this spring she came for Memorial Day. and it was her first opportunity to put flowers on her great-great-grandfather's grave. And she was there as we celebrated that as a community. And then one of our families in our community always has a family reunion for Memorial Day, and they invited she and her husband to come to the reunion. So that, you know, the descendants of these people who had been neighbors for 40 years and who had gone to church together and celebrated John Bridwell's birthday, he had threw a birthday party every year and invited his neighbors to come and celebrate with him, were all together again. And so it was a complete circle. And none of that would have happened without the inspiration of the story. So it does continue just to keep going. So it was cool.
Cindy, I was hoping you might be able to talk a little bit about what you do on a day-to-day, week-to-week, month-to-month basis. And then I'm really curious, this is the first time you're seeing the film.
Yes.
I'm just curious, like, what kind of stands out to you, or what is sort of your takeaway? What are you going to be thinking about tomorrow?
Well, the major thing is, I'm not trying to downplay this, but I have heard many stories like this before, not so much about bringing the tombstone back, but just the overall stories of families, of tracing family histories of families in this state, you know, whether it's from a tombstone. I mean, a small cemetery that's near where we live, south in Odo County, years ago I had someone who wanted to know if I would actually go and take a picture of the tombstone of a descendant of one of their ancestors. And I did, and it was like an isolated cemetery just like this one, Pleasant Hill. And it was more overgrown, though. At least Pleasant Hill has been taken care of a little bit. Mm-hmm. So, but no, what your film has done, though, it has visualized so many other stories like this in our state. And that's good. I mean, I'm hoping that we can put your story on file with the Historical Society, and it may bring some hope to some other people who may have a similar situation. Now, when I said I've heard stories of this, I've been exposed to it for many years by a couple in Lancaster County. Cynthia Monroe is a genealogist. She's been a genealogist for over 50 years. Her husband works for the Lancaster County Sheriff's Department. And through the years, there would be tombstones that would be found in Lancaster County that had been stolen or abandoned, or just somebody found it in their backyard from years ago. And between him bringing it to her attention and her interest in genealogy, she has done things like this, you know, many different times. They are both now in an assisted living home. I wish they could have been here tonight. They would really enjoy this, because your film is visualizing some of the same experiences they have. And what's so great, though, is it's bringing somebody from California to Nebraska and you getting to learn about our state and the people in it and this area. I don't know what kind of impressions you had about Nebraska before. If there was a carryover that there was still Native Americans out here in this isolated area of the country and everything. But I'm just glad that with people like Julie and others, you have really learned what the real scope of this state is.
I confess I didn't know who the Cornhuskers were.
There we go.
We had to cut that from the film. It was really embarrassing. No, I think one of the things that I've learned through this process, I mean, it really was the vulnerable process of jumping in the car. You know, it was scary to get pulled over by the state trooper. Clearly it made no impact on the speed of my driving. But, you know, that idea that across the country there are so many great people, and if you take the risk to meet them and, you know, not drive through but stop. And I do feel like I was handed this golden key, and it was for me a golden opportunity to get to know everyone. And I really I love the opening of the film, which isn't actually my voice, it's my sister's, but the idea that a magical object is something that's going to connect people who might not know each other but with similar interests. And in a way, that's like the internet, how that works. It's it connects people who wouldn't have known each other necessarily in person. So that's why, in fact, we're all here. And I think you know, again, that a film can work as a connecting force is really interesting.
And the relationship that you developed with the local sheriff department and the Polk County Historical Society. I mean, that's just Nebraska at its finest.
Yeah, represented here tonight, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Deputy Sheriff Bob Carey up in the back still refers to me as the felon. I think he has natural comedic timing, but I'm still a little scared that my record hasn't been clear. Okay. We still haven't signed that paperwork, Bob, so.
I think we'll open it up to the audience if we've got any questions or comments out here.
Where's Polk County?
Polk County is about, 88 miles straight west. Sorry, I'm from California. Yes. I'm like, wait, which direction? It's west. And so, from Omaha. It's en route 96? 92? Straight out. Yeah.
Did your grandmother give you, your aunt give you a title to your gravesite?
No. But how great is she? I mean, that was a jolly Christmas. I was like, I'm 27 years old. I don't know what I want to be when I grow up, but when I'm dead. So it was an interesting thing because I think sometimes when matters are really close to us, and especially if they're family matters, we tend to see them like, do you know what I mean? Like, I was like, oh, Aunt Sonia. But then once I bought the stone myself and think there might be sort of like a genetic inclination to this kind of interest, it really helped me see that cemeteries are for the living, in fact. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, through getting to know Julie better and, you know, just even your making the distinction between a gallery and a library of stories, mm-hmm. that idea that those stories are for the living, you know? And so I don't know if having never lived in Plains, Montana, if that's where I'm going to choose to be buried at the end of my life. But it means something very different to me now than it did when I was just an eye-rolling 20-something person. I do. I own property. It's a great view.
I just wanted to say there is something about this story because after reading the article in the World Herald, within 48 hours, we hopped in our car with our dog and went out and visited Lena. We just had to see where it was. And it's really a neat place. My question is, what's the plan for the film? Where is it going next?
This is where I wish I could turn to the producer and go, but I am the producer. You know, when I was a resident at the Bemis Center for Contemporary Arts last year and was there for 2 months, and I came over here to film streams 3 or 4 times a week and really lived here. So for me, the holy grail of where I wanted to present the film was this. So I'm so honored, really, to be here. The next showing that's scheduled is going to be at the Prairie Lights Film Festival, which is in Grand Island. And hopefully, again, a lot more people from the community in Polk County will be able to get there. It's at an earlier hour in the day, too, in October. But I would love to, you know, I think to your point about it being a Nebraska story, I would love to see it, you know, shown in small communities. I think I've shown it in South Dakota and in Kansas. We won a Best Documentary Award at a small film festival. And the director wrote to me, or the festival wrote and said, this touches us because this is a story about a community like ours. So if you have any ideas about where it should screen or how it should screen, call the producer. Or just drop me a note. I mean, I think you see it in the film. Like, I came to this. It is though we were all drawn on this journey. And so my sister and I were having this bet, you know, what will happen next? Because it's every year, it's like, you wouldn't believe what happened now. Yeah. We keep getting invited. Things, you know, keep happening in a very organic way. So I would love to have the film be seen by more people in communities who, you know, the question is, who will take care of these cemeteries? And the for me, the story that's really exciting is that Chuck, in the ceremony, leaned over to me and he said, you know, the cemetery will now be taken care of for two or three more generations because of what you did. And I couldn't be more touched. Like, I like also that he has this very Nebraskan, you know, he wasn't going to say forever. Right? Like that Californian would. Oh, my God. Totally. But he was, you know, that gave him some peace that it would be protected. So if that could inspire, you know, that's the work of the film. And again, like the work of artwork, that it becomes a bigger story than my story or Julie's story. So if there's any way, well, you'll let me know.
With my connections as being the statewide cemetery registry coordinator, we have hundreds and hundreds of cemeteries in this state that do not have anyone to take care of them. And if your film can help in other ways of influencing other counties in the state to look closer at their cemeteries that are not being taken care of, yes, we have laws in the books that when cemeteries are abandoned, that it is the responsibility of the county commissioners to see that these abandoned cemeteries are at least mowed once or twice a year and things of that nature. But just as you said, the attention you've brought to this Pleasant Hill, hopefully now there it will be continued. And maybe it will make other people think about their other cemeteries within this state that need the same kind of care and protection. For example, Pleasant Hill, you can, anyone that's associated with it, you're not registered with the statewide cemetery registry. I do not have a legit registration form for that cemetery, you know. Now, I have no jurisdiction like your sheriff's department, Polk County, to come after you about it. But it
is a felony.
All you guys, right? So, but that's
so
one.
Sorry.
We have over 3,000 cemeteries in this state. Cemeteries are burial grounds in this state. And when we were first assigned to do this with the statute in 2005, you know, there's hundreds of them that have not been reported. We basically know about them from local histories and tombstones transcriptions and things of that nature. So that we may have a cemetery listed like Pleasant Hill because it is noted in local histories. But no one reported it, and there's hundreds of other ones like that. We know their existence, but there's no one taking care of them.
I think I can talk to some people about registering after the film.
Thank you for the film. That was wonderful. The question I'd like to ask you is probably personal, which is, has this experience made you think a lot about your own tombstone? Do you have one yet? Do you know what's going to be on it? But then also, our generation is maybe more familiar with Throwback Thursday than Decoration Day. And are tombstones really something that future generations need and should think about? Or will we leave a legacy online that's just as lasting for future generations?
That was a question for Julie, right?
It could be for anyone.
I tend to think of myself as a child, as an artist. So I don't think about my own mortality. So I don't have a plan. I went to a TED-like talk about a woman who you could get a box that was full of mushrooms and then turn into a tree, which sounded really cool. I haven't given it much thought at a personal level, but mushrooms, tree, route. The idea of a place and having, you know, it's something that I've dealt with within my family and having had family members who've been dispersed. It's something is very, in a way, very tragic when you can't return to a place to memorialize a person, because not only is the person lost, but the place where you can return to doesn't exist. So there's no ceremony. And so I do feel that there is that need. In a way, because I am an artist, my art is in the collection of many museums. That is, for me, a way of having my intellectual life live on. So I feel, perhaps I feel less concerned. I can't remember if there was another part of your question, but that answered it, sort of. Okay. Mushrooms in museums, yes.
This is for Cynthia Drake, and I was curious about who is supposed to put the registration in for cemeteries? Where does that responsibility lie? Because I know of several myself, but I have no idea.
Okay. Well, basically, the statewide cemetery registry was established by a statute, which is Statute 12-1401. It was established in 2005. There was a state senator who had constituents who had complained about locating cemeteries in the state. Not so much the concern about who's buried in a cemetery, but the genealogists through the years, when they were doing research and they were trying to find a cemetery their ancestors were buried, they couldn't find it, you know. Now today, 10 years later, that isn't quite as bad with so many things out there on the internet with Find a Grave and other sources, and the volunteers that put those online. That's not quite such an issue. But in 2005, it was, and that's why the statewide cemetery registry was established. It was more that they wanted the State Historical Society to get a list of all the cemeteries in the state, so that when researchers had and families had this question, they could find where the cemetery was and find out who was responsible for it. Basically, it was more of a help then of who do you contact? We want to be buried in this cemetery, and we can't find anybody associated with it. You know, who's responsible for it? However, the state legislature only gave us 15 months of funding for this. A limited amount. And the other thing was is that when the hearing was held, I was not a part of it. We had other people that were talking and everything. And they said, oh, the Historical Society has a list already. No, the Historical Society did not have a complete list. What we had a list in the library, and since I've been the librarian for 39 years there, is wonderful genealogists in this state had transcribed tombstones around the state, and they gave it to us. Now, some of you who are not familiar with doing research, why are tombstone transcriptions so important in this state? Because most of our cemeteries, small, abandoned ones, whatever, don't have a cemetery board. They have nobody to take care of them. There's no records. The tombstone is the only representation of that person being buried there. And once those tombstone transcriptions were put on file with us, when families would be coming to do research, they could then go to the old newspapers, which we also have on microfilm, the largest collection in the state, to look up the obituary to continue their research. So when we were given this assignment, which the statute gave us a lot of leeway, a little bit of what we recorded, we tried to record all that information. We not only wanted to know who was responsible for that cemetery, or if it was abandoned, if the county was taking care of it. We also wanted to know when it was established, and that there was a plat of it, if they could give us a copy of it, if there was something written. We've had some cemeteries in our state that have books that have been written on them and compilations. You know, what is there about that? All of that was put in the registry. But it was still that the most important point of the statute was of just locating a cemetery and who was responsible for it. Now, where did that come from? Okay, I already said we had limited funds even. All we could do was just go start in the counties with the county historical societies, locating what cemetery associations did exist, contacting genealogists, local genealogical society, the funeral directors. We would send out letters and flyers trying to get that information. Now, 15 months, 93 counties, no way did it happen. At the end of that time, we had did all the research that I wanted done for every county to try to find all the cemeteries and add to data about it. We had 73 counties. Okay, my assistant then spent part-time of her job until 2011 trying to do more. So we still have, and she got eight more done, we still have a dozen counties in this state that we know about the cemeteries, most of them that exist, but we have not followed up with all the research in finding out more about those cemeteries. And today it's an unfunded mandate. I'm basically it. Now the only good thing is that our Historic Preservation Division, with some federal money and a private donation from a genealogist who was active with our with the Historical Society, we did get about $25,000 that the in-house database that we put together through that 15 months and after, it's now ready to go up on our website. It's only that we have technicality problems of getting it up there. But we finally have it in a format that people can't, that we hope that we can get it on our website, that people can use it for research. But again, getting back to your question, though, yes, there's a statute on the books for it. And on our website, there is an application form that you can fill out for every cemetery that you're involved with. Anyone can report a cemetery in this state. If you would have wanted to have reported the Pleasant Hill Cemetery in Polk County, you could have done it. That there was places you could report that you did it, and then who was in charge of it. So anyone can report a cemetery.
It's going to be a race to report. Someone's running out of the room right now. Do you have any other questions and comments in the audience?
I have a question.
Do you have any information about how and when the stone was stolen in the very beginning?
So it was stolen in 1945, and there is no information about how it got to Wyoming. When I went and found the auctioneer who'd sold it to Dave Osmondson, they wouldn't talk to me, and I was like, okay. So that went really badly. But I decided at that moment that it wasn't my job necessarily to be an investigative reporter.
I was thinking maybe the Historical Society, or there was some local news article about the stone being stolen.
That's exactly
back
what my
in
question
66
was
years ago.
That was exactly what my question 70. Was. Be. This would have been in 1945,
yeah.
46. Was there anything reported in the newspaper at that time? Have you looked at the local newspapers?
I didn't see anything.
That was Julie's department.
part two.
But she did look.
Yeah. I was actually focusing more on the time period where she had died, so I didn't actually look at that.
Okay. Because that's what made me curious when I was looking at this. I kept thinking, I mean, your sheriff has already said that there were no court there's no records on file from the courthouse in regards to the stealing of it. Have anything to report it?
We're not even sure if it was ever reported stolen.
Oh, okay.
Because the only, as far as I remember, it was Chuck Dreamus was 10 years old when it was stolen. So
okay.
he was the living witness.
Okay.
Yeah. And again, because he's the first cousin, it's so surreal, right? That there's a living, there are two living first cousins of a baby who died in 1880 because his dad was in his 70s, if that's right. So it really, isn't it, it's Chuck's memory of the date of when it was stolen.
Okay. So as far as you know, that there is, they're probably,
did you want
it's
to
only
say
from
something?
His memory.
Okay.
Well, and as far as the archives, we've searched the archives, and that's why we can't find anything that's ever been reported through the papers. In fact, just that local community out there was aware that it was stolen because we've asked other farmers in the area that have been there for decades, and they've never heard of this, and obviously until you bought it stolen and did all that stuff. But I think that was just that tight community right there that uncles told cousins and cousins told grandpa and grandma that, hey, Lena's stone has been missing. Mm-hmm. We don't know when they actually discovered it missing, if it had been gone a week, a month, because okay. You know, in the wintertime, who goes out? And maybe a lot of people do go out in the wintertime because, you know, the roads back then didn't have snow plows that went through to move the snow out of the way so you could actually right. get to these cemeteries. So we're thinking, you know, it could have been weeks or months before this had happened. Mm-hmm. And just so everybody knows, there's no statute of limitations on felonies. You have the right to remain silent, but not the ability.
Don't you think we should have a TV show called The Cop and the Artist? We just drive around, like, looking at stuff.
I want to know how many drama classes he's been in.
Natural.
Okay. Yep. Have you been reimbursed of the $150?
Was I reimbursed? Yeah. No, but I think I made up for it in so many. Yeah, I should have sent a bill. I'll send you a bill. Care of the sheriff's department.
That might be part of your bond.
But I did look cute in the stripes, right?
You did.
I'm just kidding. Sorry.
So I have one last question I want to ask, and this is sort of a touchy feely question, but. I remember talking, Alexandra, with you a year ago when you were putting all this together, and then talking to you about a week or so ago, and you were talking about this connection that you made, this connection that you've made with Julie. And then Julie, I was talking with you about a week or so ago, and you were saying the same thing. And one of the things that strikes me about this project and part of our conversation was that, you know, there's all sorts of, like, divide here, right? You're from California, from Nebraska. We could go on. I mean, there's
I'm blonde.
Yeah. you know, probably not the most natural friendship, but I think both of you have kind of talked about this connection that you've developed and that you're going to kind of carry forward. And I'm just kind of curious, like, you know, like, what is that? Like, what is your kind of takeaway, this connection that you've developed that's kind of beyond this film?
It's a gift. The relationship that our family has developed with Alexandra and with her sister has just been phenomenal. It's expanded our worldview, obviously.
I post crazy things on Facebook.
But they've also been incredibly supportive of our kids and of us, and they're just really good friends. And it's been a blessing and a real gift.
I agree. I think it's a really incredible thing that a story that, you know, there's that moment in the film where Pastor Murray, who couldn't be here tonight, says that there is no life so insignificant that it can't bring together people generations later. And every time I hear that line, it gives me just goosebumps up everywhere. Just that idea that a child who was only 8 months old is the reason we're all sitting here, who passed away in 1880. I mean, it still kind of blows my mind. And I think that essential mystery of life, you know, that has made us all curious enough to show up tonight to, you know, for you to ask the questions you did tonight in the Omaha World Herald, that there is a decency within each one of us. And it's through objects sometimes that we are able to find that out in others. It's through telling stories, it's through making databases, you know, it's mm-hmm. through caring, and there's nothing more beautiful than seeing yourself reflected back in a family that's so full of love, you know, within their own so what we've definitely, Florence and I feel like we've become part of your family. And it is, you know, again, it's like the role the internet plays. Like we were hanging out today and we were like, oh yeah, I know all about that because I saw it on Facebook, you know? and it is this ability we have in this day and age. I'm so blown away. You know, it's a stone from 1880 and it's the internet. These two forms of communication, and it's like there's the faintest in the bottom of the stone, there's the faintest inscription that had I looked earlier, I would have seen said Lincoln Marble Works, and then you might have saved a little bit of time. But like I said, not my specialty, the research side. History major in college, oof, still. But that idea of like, how does communication work? And it gets back to what is the role of the hand, but it's what is the role of being present and going back and forth between being present with other people and the role that digital communication, how it keeps us connected. And I think it's interesting that we're time traveling up here between 1880 and 2016. And that is what's amazing about, I keep saying things like amazing, gosh, about moving between real people, real communities with real emotion, and then finding a way to archive them and stay connected through the internet. So thank you. Really tasty.
Alexandra, Julie, Cindy, thank you so much for being here. Thank you all for being here tonight.
Lena Davis probably died of diphtheria or scarlet fever. At her death, her father was only 26 years old, and her mother was only 19. She had a 3-year-old brother and a 2-year-old sister. Her mother was pregnant. Both sets of grandparents, as well as all of her aunts and uncles, lived in the community. Her grandfather, C.S. Davis, was the first settler and the first postmaster of Pleasant Home Township. He and her maternal grandfather, Christopher Doremus, were both members of the first school board. Lena's maternal and paternal families had both been in the United States for over 100 years. You've been listening to a program from Film Streams, Omaha's nonprofit cinema on Noon Forum. On today's program, we've heard a panel discussion which followed a screening of the 2015 documentary film Taking Lena Home, directed by Alexandra Grant. This program, presented in collaboration with the Omaha Public Library and the Greater Omaha Genealogical Society, was recorded by Omaha Public Radio on Tuesday evening, August 16, 2016, for broadcast at this time. The members of the panel were Cindy Drake, Nebraska History Library Curator and Statewide Cemetery Registry Coordinator with the Nebraska State Historical Society, the director of the film, Alexandra Grant, and Julie Middendorf, a genealogy enthusiast who solved the mystery of Lena's provenance. The moderator was Casey Logan, Deputy Director of Film Streams. Special thanks to Patrick Kinney of Film Streams for helping to make the recording and broadcast of this program possible. Complete Noon Forum listings, as well as an archive of over 600 previous broadcasts, are available on our website, kios.org. Now, this is your producer and host, Bob Cote, thanking you for listening.